Is this thing on? Hello, hello. What is up, you guys? You are listening to Grow with Ro. I am your host, Ramana. And on this show, we have discussions that help you feel better, think better, do better, and get you from where you are to where you want to be. So let's get into it. Okay, hello, hi, welcome back, happy Wednesday. So this is part two of my conversation with Alyssa. Last week, we talked about her starting off point and perspective when it came to men, relationships, her self-confidence, all the things. And today we will continue that conversation about her past versus present stance on marriage, female roles, dating, how she went from essentially challenging the patriarchy to now finding herself engaged and having a completely different stance on marriage and a new appreciation and understanding of men and the purpose that they serve. So if you haven't listened to part one, I do recommend pausing this episode and starting there. It got juicy. And that will give you more context for today's conversation. But other than that, let's get into it. Let's backtrack a little bit. We've gone on a lot of tangents. let's backtrack to what did you think of? So we went over your stance on kind of men and relationships at this time. But what did you think about when you thought about marriage and what marriage should look like when you were still kind of in your woke era?
I still wanted to get married. I have always wanted to get married since I was like a little girl. And I think I almost put way too much importance on it and finding the one. And oddly enough, in my mind, I was like, yeah, he's going to provide and blah, blah, blah. But then I also had this part of me that's like, he's going to understand my every emotion. He's going to understand every part of me, and like, I'm going to be perfect in his eyes. And then there's going to be a part of me where I was like, I'm going to be this opera singer, and he's got to be able to be flexible enough to travel the world with me. And I'm going to be the one whose career matters most. And so those were kind of my thoughts on marriage. I always wanted to get married. And there, even when I was feeling super feminist, there was a part of me that was like, wanted something more traditional. But at the same time, I was like, well, my career matters most, you know, and I will, if he can't do it my way, then I can't be with him kind of thing.
You wanted him to be the traditional one.
Yeah. But I also wanted him to make a lot of money. So I would be the traveling artist and he would support me and all that and go with me anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I heard I read that the other day. And it kind of hit home. It was like, all these women are out here wanting this traditional man who provides and who is chivalrous, but they're not willing to be a traditional woman in any sense of the word, whether that means softening, whether that means working to provide other value besides their looks, these sorts of things. And anytime I've heard or seen reels or on podcasts where that question is brought up, these women are, it's like the Whatever podcast or Fresh and Fit, like they end up just sort of sitting there stumped. They're like, crap, like, you're right, I'm looking for this man, but am I the type of woman that man will probably want?
Exactly.
Okay, so after that period of growth, post Jordan Peterson and the interview, you had mentioned hopping back on dating apps. What did it look like after that? Between then and meeting Caleb?
So I, of course, me and that other guy didn't work out. I, like I said, I'm one of those who like cuts things off, and I don't hold on to friendships with people I've been intimate with. But I dated somebody briefly, in the interim for like, it was long distance and it was really horrible because I thought I had come so far and I really did, but obviously there was still a lot of work that I needed to do. And this person was like a complete narcissist and I fell into the trap and it set me back quite a bit. And then when I got out of that relationship, finally, I was like, okay, I'm gonna work on myself for a year and I'm gonna start dating intentionally. And so I spent, not this past year, because I will tomorrow, okay, but I will be, have been together for a year. But the year previous to us meeting, I was like, I was working on myself, and the people that I would go on dates with, I wouldn't even go on a date with somebody who didn't share my core values. Like, I was done dating people and being like, oh yeah, but I see potential. I was done doing that. I was like, this is what I want. I want to be a wife. I want to be a mother. I want to, be in a marriage where we pursue God together. And so I am going to only date people with these values. And that made the process very easy. It made it easy for me to, like, when I decided I was going to stick to that, to say no. Like, and then I probably dated me like 4 or 5 people before I met Caleb. And I, like, when I met him, I was like, yeah. Like, I tell him this, or told him this several times, but I was like, I didn't love you yet, but I knew I was gonna marry you. I knew that, like, I was gonna fall in love with you, even if, eventually I was going to. I knew you were my man.
Oh my gosh.
So,
What was that first date like?
oh my, yeah. So we went to, so he's also from Colorado Springs. And we went to Cave of the Winds, which is like a just a big cave in Colorado Springs, and it's pretty cool. And I thought that was a really creative first date that we went on. And something that I noticed that, like, right off the bat was, like, there are lots of low-hanging rocks in the cave and lots of things that you have to step down, and you might stumble, or you have to hold on to rails and stuff. And he was in front, like, leading the way. And anytime there was one of those spots, he'd turn around and make sure I was okay. Like, he'd turn around and check for me. And I was like, that's so sweet.
I love that.
And then after that, we went and got drinks after that. And I did this, I kind of started doing this thing on dates where I just, like, I spilled out, like, my values. And I was like, look, if he needs to learn right now what I stand for. And that scared off some guys, which is a good thing. But Caleb was like, yeah, me too. I agree with all of that stuff too. And I was like, all right, cool.
Heck yeah. So that you found it like fairly easy right off the bat when it came to your guys' dynamic and the communication.
I had kind of gotten in this, like, I'm not gonna chase anymore mindset, because I had been doing too much of that. And I had a lot of anxiety around, like, if I don't text, he's not going to text me, kind of thing. Or I need to, I was very much like lived in a pick me mindset. And so once I changed my whole dating strategy, I stopped putting expectations on first dates. I stopped worrying about, are they going to text me? Are they not going to text me? And just, like, let it be, like, let him do it. Like, if he's interested in me, he will text me. And that is something that, like, Caleb did, and was, I wasn't sure if he liked me, because I was so used to people love bombing me all the time. And so that, I went after guys who, we'd be texting, be like, what are our kids gonna look like? And
My God.
who's moving in? And I'm like, I have not even met you yet, sir. And he was just, like, so even keel, and, like, I was like, I don't know if he likes me, but he kept asking me on dates. So I was like, I guess he does. And I kept going on them with him, and I just let the process happen instead of, like, forcing things to happen.
So what are some situations that maybe come to mind where you found yourself reverting to old patterns from your like feminist era? Because I know that like with me and Ryan, sometimes our pull like I have like a very masculine role in my day-to-day like job, right? I'm the disciplinarian, I'm the leader, I'm in charge. I have to hold people accountable, I have to tell people what to do. I'm very go, go, go. I live in my masculine most of my day for work. And so coming home, sometimes we've had conflict because I bring that energy back home. And if he's hitting me with masculinity, I get very argumentative and push back. And but then we're very aware of it and we can have conversations about it. And I realize, okay, this is how I'm contributing. But have you found, because I see, I mean, I've only seen pictures of Caleb, but he seems like a lumberjacky man's man. And so have you found those sorts of polarity issues coming up at any point in your relationship where you found yourself reliving those old patterns?
Yes. And I think it's similar to what you just described. You know, it's if I have felt really drained in my workday and I come home and I'm just carrying a lot of like stress. And I think women being overworked, it's hard for us to like relax and be like warm and inviting. And I do struggle with that a lot. I struggle with like wanting to take control because I lived in that mode for so many years. And that is something that I'm still working on, quite honestly, is letting go of control. And there's a part of me, like my mom is, you know, things had to be done a certain way. And I'm kind of the same way, like things need to be done a certain way or it's not good enough. And that can be a really unhealthy dynamic to like put on your partner, especially like a woman to a man. It's like the last thing you want is for your male spouse to feel like they're not good enough, that they're not doing enough for you. And yeah, so there are a lot of occasions where I'm carrying a lot of masculine energy, and I've had to constantly remind myself, hey, like go on a hike, like start taking care of yourself. And do these things that you know puts you back into this like very synergetic, open, warm, inviting aura, feminine aura. But yeah, it's a struggle. And I think, you know, it might be for a little while, but I feel like I'm learning every day. I feel like I'm growing in some way because I'm aware of it. Whereas like before in past relationships, I was like, I'm right. I'm right about this. I'm right about that. You're wrong, you know? And so I'm like, I have every right to be in control because I'm right all the time. And that's not true. You're not always right.
How do you notice things go when you guys are in that polarity of masculine and feminine versus when there's like two dudes in a room?
I mean, I feel so much softer, and I think that there is a lot more affection. There's a lot more openness to physical affection. Like you don't want to hug a bear. I mean, maybe you do. I would love to hug a bear, but you don't want to hug a bear that's charging at you. You know, like if you're just like two bulls butting heads, like there's no room for any kind of affection, whether it's mental, emotional, physical. But I know that whenever I am feeling like in my softer side and things are more polar and I'm like, oh, I feel so safe. I feel so like taken care of. And it just makes me want to like mold into this little puddle and just like, you know, do anything that he'd ask, you know, I'm more open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Things just like, they're like puzzle pieces. It just feels definitely things feel easier. When I'm in my feminine, things are easier and I just like let go and I just trust. But when I'm in my masculine, I'm way more argumentative. I'm snarky. I'm in that place of I'm right, you know, because I've earned it, because I've lived so much that I've had so many experiences that I've learned from. And that's why I'm always right, you know, like thinking that apparently he's lived not at all. He's learned nothing in his life, which is just so inaccurate. And it goes back to that mindset of like seeing men as just these dumb cavemen. They're not.
That's a really good point.
We're so used to, especially as women, I think we're surrounded by so many women and we talk to so many women. And so they all think the same because we're all able to multitask and we're all able to like, you know, men are like waffles, women are like spaghetti. So women, their thoughts just go from one to the next, to the next, to the next. And we can transition really quickly from one thought to the other, one task to another, do them all at the same time. And men are very compartmentalized thinking. And because we're surrounded by so many women who are all thinking the same and operating the same, we look at men who we don't speak to as frequently and they think completely differently, and we have to learn how they think and how they operate. But because we don't encounter it as often as we talk to women, we see it as just less. We see it as they are slower thinkers, or they're not as smart decision makers, right? Like these sorts of things, when it's like, no, actually, two different genders that two different brains process information completely differently, and both are an accurate, if both are saying the objective truths, both are a completely accurate representation of the world, but just through opposite sides of the table.
Yeah, and they're meant to complement each other. It's like my strengths, and each of us has our own strengths and our own weaknesses, men and women. And if you expect a man or a woman to behave like they're the opposite gender, like you're going to be disappointed consistently. And, but once we start to realize, and that for me is when I started like studying polarity, is that no, we don't think the same, and we don't act the same, and we don't process things the same way, but that doesn't make it any less valuable, valid, or true. And once you start to, and this is still a process I'm trying to like grasp, is that like, these things are meant to complement each other. Like where one person is weak, the other person comes in and can fill that puzzle piece, and vice versa. So yeah, I think you make a really good point there.
Can you provide any other examples of like situations that have come up where some old patterns or like shadows have shown up, whether that be from your anxious attachment? I don't know. Are you anxious attached? Are you avoidant?
This is really interesting, and because I've studied the attachment styles too, and in my everyday life, like with my family, with my friends, as a person existing in the world, I'm actually pretty avoidant. In my relationships, I'm incredibly anxious.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I haven't like. I don't think that there's a point where I was ever like, maybe in my family, I've been pretty secure at times, but friendships have honestly been hard for me because I'm like, don't ask too much of me. Don't impose on me. Like I'm not going to never ask you for help on anything. I'm never going to ask you to like, I'm not going to impose myself on you. Don't impose yourself on me. And like, if you go into like Enneagram or anything like that, I'm a type 5, and so that tends to be the introvert, avoidant, pushing away. But then when it comes to relationships, I don't know why this is, but I do get really anxious. I'm like, I haven't heard from them. I don't know what's going on. If I don't know what's going to happen, I get anxious about it. You know, like that's what anxiety comes from, is not knowing what the future holds. Or having an idea, or if like something changes, I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? Something's happening. Like, or, you know, there's a disagreement. I'm like, you don't love me anymore. and it's weird because I feel so secure on my own, like by myself. And I'm still trying to work out how I can still feel that way.
Well, it's because you care. So anxiety serves to also show us what it is that's the most important to us in life that we actually care about, right? Like the things we feel anxiety about, not this day and age of like social anxiety and this anxiety, but like actual the feeling of anxiety around, let's say, a performance, right? Or a job interview or a relationship situation. That emotion serves to show you what you truly care about. So maybe, not to psychoanalyze you, but maybe with your friendships, it's just a different level of closeness and intimacy that you have with friendships that doesn't truly cross the line of like opening yourself up to really any big potentiality of being hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so those are their friends. You say hello and then you like go home and you move on with your day, right? Or you check in and great connection. We update each other. Cool. Good times, bad times. But it's still like you say goodbye and you go home at the end of the day.
Yeah. It's like, this is my space. That is your space.
Yeah. You're not trusting that person with your heart. Mm-hmm. So that would be my guess.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. Yeah. And I mean, not to like go into like friendships and whatever, but like, I mean, I, in the past, I have not had great friendships. So then I was like, I'm just not going to need anybody. So I think that's why I've always tried to make relationships so big, because I'm like, you're the one person in my life I can trust. You're the one person that I can be myself around. You're the one person who I can lean on, and you can lean on me. And there's this preacher that I listen to a lot. He's passed on. But one of the things that he talks about is idols, the idols that you make. And it's whenever you make a good thing an ultimate thing. And there's so much of my life where I've made romantic relationships the ultimate. Like, this is what gives my life purpose. And if it doesn't work out, then I'm flawed. And so I think that's where a lot of that sort of anxiety comes from. Because I'm like, what am I if I can't, if I'm basically, I worship relationships or romantic relationships. And that's something that I've like recently come to grips with.
What's the pastor? I don't know all these names. Preacher.
Yeah, pastor, minister, preacher.
Preacher. What's his name?
His name is Dr. Timothy Keller. And you can find him on Spotify. They continuously update his sermons that were recorded from years and years and years. And they'll keep them in certain series, like there for a week. Each one will be on a specific subject, and so you can kind of follow along. But he is very well studied in lots of different religions, philosophy, psychology. And I love that he puts so much emphasis on context and language and worldviews and time. You know, how we as Western people see religion these days. And even if you're not religious, I feel like it's very informative.
Yeah, I want to start listening to him. I like that. Do you recommend starting at the bottom of all the Spotify ones? Or
I think that they take some off and then add them. But you'll be able to tell if there's a series that he does. But honestly, I would just go and pick a title that you're interested in, like a subject matter that you're like, oh, that sounds interesting, and just give it a listen. I can also send you my favorites.
Send me your like top two favorites. So then the original question there was, how have you been seeing those old patterns or shadows come up? So even with Caleb, do you find that there's, what's the smile for? Can you think of a situation maybe recently that's come up that you're like, whoa, old Alyssa, or that even he checked you on or anything like that? What comes to mind?
I think that I do tend to get back into some victim mindset sometimes. And you mentioned like, it's something that he's checked me on. And that I also have, it's been highlighted. You know, they say that your relationships become mirrors for the things about you that, you know, need to be changed. And I do that. Like I said, that was something that I struggled with a lot before I moved out here, before I started my big change, is I do take accountability and responsibility for my actions, but it's in this way that's like, I'm never good enough. Like I always fail no matter how hard I try, and I'm not doing it, and I can't. So I get into this, like, I can't change. Like, I'm doing everything, and what's wrong with me kind of mindset. And that, you know, that does tend to come up for me. And it's something that, like, we're both aware of. Yeah, and that's probably one of the bigger issues, is that I do get really down on myself. During conflict, and I start to like lose hope and feel bad about myself.
How has he helped you work on that?
I think that that's still a work in progress.
Or like, okay, what does he do in those moments when maybe he sees you self-sabotage, or just get down on yourself?
Yeah, I think it's like you're playing the victim. And like, I know that already.
You're like, actually, he's not helpful at all. And I'm like, I get it. Ryan's the same. He does like, the same thing. He's like, victim. And I'm like, that's not helpful right now.
I'm like, I know that.
Okay, fair.
Yeah, but that it's hard. It's hard whenever you don't struggle with something like that to understand how someone can go there. And that I think that that's one of the things. It's like it is hard if you and the weird thing is like when I went through my big transformation, I kind of got into this like stop complaining and just do it mindset. Like I lost empathy for people. Like people would send me messages and be like, "How did you do this? How did you lose all this weight? And how did you change?" And da da da. And I'd be like, I'd tell them everything, and then they would say, "That's awesome. Well, I have this going on, and I have this health issue that's not." And I'd be like, "Stop with the excuses. I don't care." And which is no, there's no empathy there. There's no room for empathy. But, and then in my head, I was like, well, I've been in that victim mindset. I've made excuses for myself. And if I can do it, anyone can do it. And, you know, that can work for you. But if you feel that way, it's hard to empathize. So if you're somebody who doesn't struggle with any kind of victim mentality and you're the person who you're supposed to like love and adore is going through that, it's really hard to get on their level and be like, I understand, and how can I help? It's just like, stop, just get over it and fix it. And I think that that can be a general, like, male sort of way of handling those sort of melancholic emotions that women have.
For sure. And I mean, you just said that you noticed that in yourself as well, right? When you were in that place of like independence and like masculine energy. I actually talked about this on an episode, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, where I definitely became a highly masculine single girl because I was looking to like the people, the podcasts I listened to and the books I was reading was all men. Right. It was Andy Frisella and Sean Whalen and like these sorts of strong, masculine, like raw, macho guys. Those are the people I resonated with because they were the guys that were like, stop being a little bitch, like just get up and do it. Right. And teaching you mental toughness. And that's like my personal training style as well. I had a really hard time being like, oh, that's hard. It's like, yeah, life's fucking hard. Like, get up. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I realized that recently that actually the people I looked up to were sending this message to other men.
Right. It works for men.
Yes, they're literally set like that is a message for men, how to build character, how to build a business, how to become strong men. And here I am, like these are the guys I resonate with. I don't like reading women or listening to women because they're like, oh, look in the mirror, tell yourself you're beautiful, it's okay, stay in bed, right? And so for me, it is, I don't know, I've gotten really far in life by working on mental toughness and mental fortitude and this perseverance concept. But at the end of the day, that's like that swung me to the really far end of masculinity, that doing, right? That doing and that hustle and that strength. And so just as I'm sure you're sort like what we just discussed is like now I had to work on the softening. How do I still not negotiate with myself and like have discipline while also understanding the concept of compassion and how I respond when someone just tells me to do something is, to your point, not necessarily how everyone works that way. And so even with personal training, I read this book recently called Motivational Interviewing, which teaches how to coach from a place of creating change based on where the person is currently at, rather than telling them, okay, starting tomorrow, you're gonna get up at 5, you're gonna eat this, you're gonna do this, here we go, like, come on, you can do it, versus like, where are they at? Just set the bar like one notch higher from where they're telling you that they're at right now, not where you want them to be for your sake.
Yeah, exactly. And that's now that you just kind of gave me an epiphany moment where I'm thinking about where I started in my hiking journey and like my fitness journey is I could not have gone as far as I did if I hadn't had a lot of compassion for myself on the fact that I was like, I'm not going to be fit after one hike. You know, I had to sit every single time for months, for like a whole year at least, with being like not getting too overwhelmed with this, to use a metaphor that's very appropriate, this mountaintop. You know, I was, if you sit here and you look at the whole mountain and you're like, I have to be at the top, you're gonna get overwhelmed and you might lose motivation. But if you have compassion on yourself and say, this is where I'm at now, and I'm at least doing something. And I think that, like you just said, like starting just one notch higher than where somebody is, and you can be at the top. If you got down, you're like, yeah, anybody can do it. Just do it. But then think about the process it took you to get there. And, or, you know, the process it took me to get there was I had to continuously have compassion for the fact that, like, I'm not where I want to be, but if I keep doing this, I will get there. And, yeah, like whatever you just said was kind of a pew moment for me thinking about that. Like, after I had been through this for a couple of years, I stopped having that compassion for other people who were like where I was. I was like, well, I did it, so you can do it too. And like you said, I was consuming a lot of these hyper masculine books, and that was my mindset too, was very much like no excuses, get it done, mental fortitude. Yeah, same thing that you were just describing.
One more question before our final question, and that's just kind of let's put your relationship with Caleb into like a pretty little package of how it's different from relationships in the past. I know that you've mentioned, obviously, you went into dating with a totally different mindset, being very open and firm about your values and what you were looking for. But there was also this huge transformation just about you as a person from the feminism and that sort of stuff to now wanting to be a mother, wanting to be a wife, understanding the male female dynamics and these sorts of things. So that relationship probably looks drastically different from any relationship you've had in the past. Can you, I guess, speak on how do you see your future with Caleb now looking compared to how you envisioned a relationship, an engagement, a marriage, or a relationship between a man and woman to look back in the past, in your past relationships?
So I, when I decided that I wanted to be a mother and raise another generation of like independent thinkers and people who could make change in the world or in their communities, not that I can force any child of mine to be whoever I want them to be, but you know, I wanted to instill and raise kids with those values. I started to realize that I needed to sacrifice some of the things I thought I wanted for that greater good. So, like, you know, I want to be a good wife and I want my children to see a healthy marriage with healthy dynamics, to see love and respect, you know, raising young boys to see a father who has integrity and consistency and someone who respects and loves their mother. And none of those things were, I didn't really consider any of those things when I dated before. And now I see a marriage as, you know, I think a lot of people would consider pretty traditional, historically speaking, even though, like, I think that's pretty rebellious these days to want those things. But at first, when I decided I wanted those things, I thought, well, people are going to think that I'm giving up everything I want when I'm really just answering the call of something higher than what I thought I wanted to do with my life. I think at one point I was like, I don't want to, you know, if I decide to be some opera singer, I don't want to wake up one day when I'm 50 something and be single without children and have, you know, no one. My parents pass away and my family has their own families and I'm alone. And I think that that's a point that a lot of people are starting to make for women who are like, I'm going to career myself until I'm 40 and then get married. I'm like, but that's going to be, you know, that's going to be tough to have kids at that age and to like find a man who's anyway. So I think I just the relationship that he and I are both aiming toward is something that is more along those lines, and that's higher than just ourselves. But like to raise another generation and improve society in some small way, or at least within our family, we can live a very independent lifestyle. So I don't know if that answered your question.
No, that was perfect. That was it. Thank you. Okay, last question. What is your current biggest growing pain? So, what challenge are you currently facing, whether in your relationship or really any area at all, that signifies an opportunity for growth?
I think that I have always had an issue with trust in general, and I'm not talking just about relationship wise, but like trusting that things are going to work out and letting go of some of my control and anxiety around the outcome of certain things. That is a growing pain for me. It's definitely, I think it's challenged more whenever you're in a relationship than when you're on your own, and like the only person you have to think about and take care of is yourself. Versus like when you're in a relationship, there's two people involved, there's two feel sets of feelings, and there's two motive sets of motivations and ways of being and core beliefs that you have to adjust to, and that's difficult, and that's definitely a growing pain, I think, for most people. But I definitely see it for myself is like adjusting, letting go of control, not being anxious, and just trusting the process, like letting things change and grow. What's the word I'm looking for? More naturally. And oh, there's a word I'm looking for, but I can't think.
Authentically,
Authentically or
genuinely,
organically, that's the word.
organically.
Yeah. And instead of being like, it has to be like this now, by this time, we need to be here, by this time, this needs to happen. Just like, and that's the part of that is again that masculine feminine struggle is the flow. Women femininity is flow and allowing and like accepting, whereas masculine is control, not in a bad way, but like making things work and making things happen. And so letting go of that and just allowing and accepting and letting things flow is still kind of a growing pain for me. But once I start thinking about it, then it's like it comes more naturally.
I've had to work on that quite a bit too. I remember when I had this thought in the shower. I feel like every episode I'm like, and then I was in the shower. I realized, and this might help you, it might not, but I realized that I wanted to see how things would play out more than I wanted to control how they would play out. Because if I just gave opportunity to see what Ryan would do or what this person would choose or what opportunity would come to me or whether I would get the opportunity or not, there is more reward to seeing it play out naturally than the feeling you get from it playing out the way you want it to, but because you controlled it to get there. So with Ryan, for example, I can be controlling around, please do this or please don't do this or, but very like controlling about it. And then so he would do or he wouldn't do the would, let's say wouldn't do. He wouldn't do the thing because I asked him not to do the thing. But that wasn't as satisfying to me as if I gave him the space to see if he would, which choice he would make. Right. And if I gave
Right.
him the choice and he chose not to do the thing, there was so much more trust that was there was trust that was built from that. There's no trust that's built when you control a situation and they listen to you because you don't know if that's actually what they would choose.
Yeah, exactly.
So then you're actually you end up like more insecure at the end of that is something that I found. And then resentment gets built because now you're making this person behave in all these ways that you want that bring you safety, quote unquote. But then you almost start to lose respect for them because now they're like a Frankenstein model of you versus being who they really are. And so now you're not really attracted to them the same way. The polarity is gone because they're essentially being a doormat that you're walking all over and they're letting you because they care, but there's no trust or respect for a person who just is becoming everything that you want them to because they love you that much, you know, because you want, at the end of the day, you want to see them love themselves more than they love appeasing you.
Yep.
I think women put men through those tests sometimes through those acts of control. Like, we want the man to say no, because not only then can we trust him more, but we see his character more.
Yeah. Yep. I think that you hit the nail right on the head with that one. And that's the thing is, like, when you end up dating, when you're with somebody in a relationship or marriage with someone who has strong boundaries, whenever you, and the, like you said, women do this to men where we press the envelope. And when you get pressed back, not a tyrannical boundary, but one that's like, I'm not going to let you push me this far, then that creates a sense of respect within us toward our partner. And I mean, to your point, I think that when you let go of trying to make somebody into this Frankenstein version of what you would do, And then it changes your perspective on them, because you, how can you really trust that they would make that decision when you're saying, when you're in control of everything? So yeah, I mean, there's a point that, months and months ago, there was a point where I was like, yeah, you just let people make their choices. And it worked for me. And then I just like somehow forgot that for a little while. It takes an extraordinary amount of mindfulness to, and self-discipline to not want to push all the time, push your way, push the way that you think things should be done. Because we don't always know better. We may think we do, but we don't.
I think sometimes we forget that, right? The mindfulness around it, because it's also extremely uncomfortable. It's more uncomfortable in the short term to release control because you now have to self-soothe. Right? Especially in that anxious attachment, if you're getting anxious around, you know, what decision is he going to make? And he made the decision that I really didn't want. And now he's off doing God knows what, or, but you know, the tapes start playing of all the things you're imagining are happening that are bad. Now it's your job to sit through that and have tools in place for yourself to soothe yourself through that. Right. So I think that's why we try to avoid that feeling by controlling, because then there's no short term discomfort when you can control something. But there's long term consequences of them, which are, like we said, that lack of respect piece, that lack of attraction, that polarity issue, all these things. So I think just not the knowledge of that, I try to remind myself of that in situations like, okay, I'm relinquishing control and it's going to suck. And I'm going to be sitting in my chair, like sweating and hyperventilating for like 10 minutes, but it's all going to be okay. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Learning the tool of self-soothing in those instances is so incredibly, incredibly important, because the control aspect is coming from, I don't want to have to do that. I don't want to have to deal with my anxiety. I want them to change so that I don't have to be anxious. And that really is not fair to do to somebody else. And like you said, it has long-term consequences. But yeah, I mean, that's always, I appreciate you saying that, because that's always a really good reminder to keep, is like, let people be who they are. Because you want to love who they are, not who you made them to be.
Yep. Okay, Miss Alyssa, we have reached the end. This was such a great conversation. Thank you so much for making the time. I know we said like an hour and here we are 2 hours in. But I just think this was like such an impactful conversation. I really appreciate your vulnerability and transparency and coming on. And it was your first podcast. So
caught my podcast cherry.
As I've dreamed of doing for everyone.
No, I appreciate this too. Thank you for having me. And, you know, it's, I haven't talked about this stuff in a long time, and I appreciate the opportunity. I'm sure that there are other women out there who are going through, are on the precipice of this transformation, have been through it themselves. And I just think it's like I texted you last week. I think it's such an important thing to talk about, and I appreciate that you have created a space to talk about a lot of these really important issues. And so thank you for having me.
Guys, as usual, if you got value out of the episode, please pass it on to someone else you think will get value. Post it, tag me so I can repost. I will also link Alyssa's Instagram in the show notes. So send her some nice messages and questions, whatnot. And that is it. I will see you next week. Bye.
Yay!